Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, I hit with a big win for myself and our listeners on Sunday at Harbortown. We're recapping the action from the Low Country and a little bit of COVID drama as well, too, that we'll get into. Plus, giving out podcast exclusive picks for this week's Travelers. If you want to win like last Sunday, then listen in for that. We're back in Connecticut, our old neck of the woods, our old stomping grounds. Plus, we got musical movie talk, trashing on Tom Brady, because I'm totally not bitter about his departure anymore. And this week, guest. She is a Symetra Tour pro and one of the longest female drivers of the golf ball in the world. We're profiling Alex Phillips as well. But first, gotta shout out the official sports book of the Course of Life podcast, betnow.eu. Our promo code is Course Life. If you want to go to betnow.eu, you can get an additional 50% in your account. So put in $50 to get going for S Sports Return now, and you'll get $75 back in your account. They've got all the action you need. They've got golf lines, weekly head-to-head matchups, and picking the winners just like I do on a weekly basis. Again, it's betnow.eu. Promo code is Course Life. There's different promotions every day and new ways to win. So bet and win now with betnow.eu.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, presented by Desert Fox Golf, Groovit Golf, and Quantix Golf. I'm Michael, he's Alex, and Alex, this is unofficially episode 100 for us.
It is, yes. We have like three or four different counters on the history of our podcast. We've got some Festivus episodes mixed in. We've got some bonus interviews, so I don't really know exactly what the total count of recording is, but bottom line, confetti, balloon, celebration, we've made it to 100 episodes. We did it.
It's, you know, big deal. We'll have a pretend cake like they would if this was a TV show for getting 100 episodes.
We're going to get a nice big check just like they do on the PGA Tour. I'm expecting a really big check in the mail. Yeah, for us. This is a milestone, so a very exciting time. So I hope everyone else is celebrating with us. Thanks for being a part of the journey, and cheers to another 100 more.
Yeah, and the PGA Tour has been celebrating last week, last 2 weeks now, back in full swing.
That's nice.
They were just up the road for me in Hilton Head at the RBC Heritage at Harbortown. Beautiful course. But before we get into what happened over the course of the weekend, let's talk about what happened at the end of the day on Thursday, which was Nick Watney being removed from the tournament for testing positive.
Yeah, it was a weird scenario because late Thursday he had said he'd had some weird feelings. He woke up from an afternoon nap, according to his caddy, feeling a little bit out of it. So he requested, he went out of his way. I give him props for kind of going out of his way, saying, this doesn't feel right. I want to get myself an additional test. Finally came down Friday morning as he had arrived at the course and then found out that he tested positive for coronavirus. So he was removed quickly from the property and he's in a 10-day quarantine now. So you're not going to see him this week at the Travelers, and he's officially the first PGA Tour player to test positive. Obviously, a headline that, you know, it was inevitable, but when it hits you the first time, it's still a little bit daunting when you see it come across the screen.
I think maybe what's most surprising is that it happened in week two.
Yeah, pretty early.
Is that it happened this quickly. So the question to me is, how soon do we have case number two pop up?
Yeah, so what they did was they contact trace tested 11 people who came in contact with Nick Watney during the course of the earlier half of the week. A couple players and caddies that played with him, and then also that played with him in practice rounds, and a few other officials as well with the tour that come in close contact with him. So they were tested, all came back negative. That's encouraging. Obviously, the goal is you want it to stay at one, and hopefully you don't see that spread and it going to other people. Then that puts the entire tour in jeopardy at that point. Fortunately, it does seem like it is isolated for the moment, and we're sure hoping it is. But the bottom line is that it's going to make people think twice about, you know, the return of golf. It's like, listen, I know we want to return back and see some sort of normal, but realize that there are some concrete things as part of a round of golf. Like, the fist bump at the end, that may have to just be removed for the time being. As much as it is a great alternative to the handshake and it's much safer, it still may need to be completely eliminated. So just little things like that we're going to realize as we go along may have to be changed subtly.
Yeah, it's about the optics. It's about being one of the first sports back, along with NASCAR is back. Bull riding is back as well. I saw that the other day. You still need to really promote the safe practices, so let everyone understand just how serious this still is.
Yeah, well said. And honestly, the thing that was really troubling about week two, it was on top of that case, was just a few player tweets from Hilton Head Island. You kind of know the area, Mike, being from there, and you understand what a vacation hub and destination that can be. There are not a ton of regulations going on there last week, and it showed in the players' tweets. Justin Thomas, Matt Fitzpatrick, a bunch of them just really shocked at how much of a zoo it was. They used the word zoo, described restaurants in town as they drove by and whatnot. So players were not afraid to speak up, and I appreciate that because you want things to be cleaned up for the future weeks here on tour.
Yeah, I mean, I can speak to living just down the road in Savannah, which is a much larger vacation spot maybe than Hilton Head. We don't have the hotels and resorts as much. We are a historic city. It's a mess down here. Our mayor is gearing up to put a mask ordinance in place, which I think is great. But, you know, people are traveling to our communities here in Savannah and Hilton Head from all over the country because they can come here and get drunk and
let it
and
loose.
Go to the beach
exactly.
And let's loose. And, you know, I get it. You need to let loose, but you got to find a way to do that safely. And people are not doing that.
Yeah. So that's something to watch out for in future weeks here. This week, Connecticut, you know, you're just kind of like looking state by state in the future weeks. We have Connecticut, we got Michigan coming up, we've got Ohio. So we're going to get a look at a lot of different states and we're going to kind of track it really with the tour here in the next few weeks and months and see exactly as the tour moves around how this affects cases within the tour and outside and the cities they go to. So definitely something to watch in the weeks ahead.
Now let's talk about the actual golf that was played over the course of the weekend. Yes. Let's go back in time for a moment to something you said last week. Let's listen to this prediction real quick from last week.
And then my third is a guy who's just automatically good in the Carolinas. He's Carolina born. He literally named his kid Wyndham after the Wyndham Championship. He loves winning in the Carolinas. It's Webb Simpson for my third pick. What did I say, Mike? Webb Simpson in the Low Country. He's an automatic bet in either Carolinas. I don't know if I'm going to stretch that to Georgia, but Webb Simpson, Carolinas, auto bet forever. Great winner.
I mean, winner, winner, chicken dinner for you. So I expect a couple bucks to come my way just because I'm your buddy.
You do get the little rollover commission for being my co-host. 23-1 odds winner there. Again, my picks are weekly. Course of Life 1 on Twitter. And I always give out a few here, which I'll give in a moment for the travelers this week. But a great win to get on the board. You know, week two back, getting the winner. That was nice. He rolled with the Sunday 64. And $1.50 bet paid $34.50. So it doesn't cost much to get involved and have fun. You can just put $1 or $2 on these guys and have a fun little payout and follow along with my picks as well. And hopefully you do that in the coming weeks. Good to get on the board.
I got to ask a question though. At the end of the day, Saturday, it looked pretty good. Webb Simpson sitting pretty, but what a Sunday. How many heart attacks did you have wondering Webb Simpson was going to pay out
was
for you?
Just all over the place. Like, I know you didn't have a chance to watch a ton of the coverage itself, but just looking at the leaderboard on Sunday, how nuts was that seeing what? Fertelli posted 62 and got to 17 under. He was the leader at 17 under, Mike, before the final group even teed off. That's how many guys were going low on Sunday. It was just birdies galore all day.
It was a total, I think birdie fest is an understatement. It was a birdie smorgasbord.
Yeah, and Webb Simpson, he had the knockout blows too. What was it, 16? Yeah, birdie at 16 and 17. Just absolute knockout blows there to get the win. So shout out to Webb. Craziness on Sunday overall with the leaderboard and the drama we wanted.
Yeah, and then you also got your typical June late day low country coastal empire thunderstorms that just seemed to wreak havoc, wondering what was going to happen if the round was going to get finished. They chased the sunset, just finished as well. And the fans in the condos and the houses next to the course still stuck around.
That's a nice spot, having a condo right there next to the 18th green with the lighthouse in the background when you have your morning coffee. Yeah. That's a spot I could wake up to. But that was a very unfortunate Father's Day occurrence. Mike, you and I do not have kids yet, so we don't quite appreciate this. But I had multiple friends of mine who are fathers texting me in anger about the thunderstorm's arrival because this was their Sunday afternoon to sit on the couch, unencumbered, unimpeded, and watch the entire telecast. The moment they went to CBS's coverage, we had the rain delay begin. So I'm sorry for the upset fathers out there, but we did get the finish in on Sunday night just before sunset eventually.
We did. It's all okay. Let's also talk about the microphones that were used on the course all weekend.
Booms.
And let's back up before we get to Sunday because it was what happened. Was it Friday? was the comments I'm thinking of that were said?
Oh, yeah.
Or was it Saturday?
There were a few moments. Well, there was, first of all, there was Adam Hadwin who got mic'd up, and he accidentally picked up what he thought was a speck of a rock behind his ball in the bunker. So he put his two fingers on the little pebble mic. And you know when you think it's a pebble, and then your fingers push together, and then it just disintegrates, and you realize it's a pile of sand? Well, that happened to him live when he was mic'd up. So that was a very unfortunate moment because he had to call the penalty on himself there. And we were just getting really great mic tastes all week. And I'm really enjoying getting this no fans, all mic'd up new process on the tour. It's great to see.
It was pretty great. And then, of course, so on Sunday, we got Bubba and Wes and Brian mic'd up for most of their round.
This is great. So this is like PGA Tour Sunday morning, you know, like the throwaway group, you know, first groups off Sunday morning. Does not matter what they shoot at all. So the best part was it was just the two of them. The boom mics were following them really tight for all 18 holes. So you could hear every single conversation they were having all day. They talked about their plans. They both hopped in Bubba Watson's RV right after the round and started driving up to Connecticut. So they're living in the RV life together, a couple of Southern buddies. It was just really cool to see. The bottom line, you know, and Mike, we've been clamoring for more mics, more audio during golf broadcasts for years. And if there's any ray of sunshine amidst this craziness in our world and the coronavirus, it has brought a whole new light to golf broadcasting. It's very interesting to watch.
Yeah, it's we want to hear from these players in every sport. I want to hear from them in every, not just golf. Golf is an opportunity, I think, to really make it happen and show it can happen. But I love it in any sport when you start to get those moments when they're mic'd up in the middle of the game.
And I'm usually not a big Bubba guy, but he was so funny when you get to hear him in context during his round. He had a great approach shot to the 18th, and he's nowhere near the lead, mind you. He hit a really tight approach shot and got just a random cheer from a guy in a condo at 18. And he just mockingly said to Wesley Bryan, "Oh, great, Bubba, you're amazing. You know, the leaders don't tee off for 7 hours, but I love you, Bubba." Just mocking where he stood in the field. So good time seeing everyone mic'd up.
It was. Let's switch gears over to the Korn Ferry Tour. Our boy, Vin Zandia, who was on the podcast a while ago, was sitting pretty at the end of the third round. He unfortunately went the wrong direction in the fourth round.
No, man. This is how fickle the Korn Ferry Tour is, that the tour right below the PGA, for everyone who's been following the podcast or just joined. It's intense out there. I sent you the scorecard. He was 25 under through three rounds, Mike. You would think in any scenario, no matter what you shot in the fourth round, that you could hold on to a lead, but not on the Korn Ferry. A couple guys passed him as he went over par on Sunday. A good finish for Vince, but disappointing to see, and just amazing how low those guys can go out there.
It really, all you had to do is you make it sound like it's really easy. All you have to do is go even par. Yes. Retro would have been fine.
Use the ball as birdies the first 3 days, I guess.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's all right. We still love him. We're still rooting for him, hoping to see him at the top of the leaderboard.
They're on
soon.
TV this week, the Korn Ferry guys. Yeah. First one. I'm always dying for more of these tournaments to be on TV, but Utah Championship, it's going to be on the evening, little primetime action on the Golf Channel, which would be nice to kind of go along with the PGA Tour coverage in the afternoon. And I'll see the guys in San Antonio in a couple weeks. So good stuff.
Speaking of this coming weekend, the guys head up to Connecticut. Like you said, Bubba Watson did in the RV, headed up there for the Travelers Championship. Let's talk about who you have on your list and who are some of your exclusive podcast picks.
Yeah, this is the moment that all the gamblers have fast forwarded to. So you can officially stop right now. Here come the picks. Here come the picks. Here come the picks. So Travelers, Connecticut, Mike. Parkland Golf Course, short, not a lot of length needed, but a lot of creativity is needed. So you're looking at guys who know how to shape the ball. They're not afraid to tone it back and play to the right spot, and they're good around the greens. So it's definitely going to take a whole package. And a guy that we just mentioned who has won here before, who hits it long but can tone it back, Bubba Watson. He's going off at 40-1. He's won this tournament before. So I absolutely love his chances this week.
He's got creativity. He's not a bad pick. Other guys in the field, Rory, JT, Bryson.
Yeah.
Do you think Rory's going to encounter another crab behind his ball?
I know. What a moment that would be. What a crazy, it literally had a crab crawl over his Bubba Watson's ball when they're playing together. And that was a funny exchange as well, too, with the mics on Friday. Good memory there. A funny moment with the broadcast last week. I don't think there's going to be very many crabs in Cromwell, Connecticut, Mike. Correct me if I'm wrong. But that's just
I don't remember. seeing any crabs when we were in Connecticut.
This is like out in the Highlands. Like everyone's like Cromwell, Connecticut. Yeah, it's one of those towns in Connecticut that's like not even near anything. I couldn't even give you context of where it is. Just know it's somewhere in the middle and it's a beautiful golf course that I've been to several times. So
that's right. Let's talk about one other guy in the field, Patrick Bad Man Reed.
Yeah, that's my other one. Those are my two podcast exclusives, are Bubba and Patrick Reed, Captain America at 43-1. Got to the tournament early. He's had success at the Travelers before. Got to this tournament early because I think he missed the cut last week. So he's been practicing there since Sunday. Good history here. Guy that plays well on small greens and must make putt scenarios. So I like Patrick Reed as well this week. Again, at Course of Life 1, if you want to see the rest of my card and join, and let's get 2 weeks winners in a row here.
That'd be huge.
Yeah.
That'd be phenomenal. Let's move over to things we've been doing to keep ourselves busy, get into our personal lives. I don't know if we can still call this quarantine content like it's we have not. Been.
We're going to have to rebrand it's, that. What is it? Socially distant content? Slightly? It kind of is.
I guess so. Yeah, I guess that works.
Yeah, random hobbies and finds outside the world of sports and golf and whatnot. We have a life outside of golf. I know we talk about it very enthusiastically out here, but there's actually a lot more going on in our world. And just like maybe the things that we watch, you know what I mean? What have you been watching recently?
I think I said this a couple of weeks ago, but I did finally get access to Disney Plus, so I've been watching The Mandalorian.
Oh, sure. Yes.
It's good. It's I like it. It's fun. It's good times.
Good stuff. I've watched Rocket Man, a musical movie that I had yet to see.
Yep.
I don't know how many of those you ran through. I know there was a big run in Hollywood in the last year or two of let's do a musical biopic about this artist. So I finally getting through those, got through Bohemian Rhapsody, the Beatles one, whatnot, Rocket Man now. So I guess which other one should I be crossing off along that line? Or my thinker question for you is what other musical artist should they be making a biopic movie about like this in the future? What's in the cards?
Wow, you scared the guy out of me, and now I'm really mad that I'm not remembering his name. David Bowie. There we go. David Bowie
needs one. That would be a good one.
You'd be good. Yeah, the problem I have with these in general is that you need to find a good way to really weave it into your story. I know the Rocket Man was more had those musical numbers. I haven't seen it, but I know the musical numbers were more acted out as opposed to others where it's your music is in the performance of the star doing it.
Right. And my wife loves those type of movies, like the kind of the Pitch Perfect vibe where they weave the music in. So she really took to that aspect. I did find that funny. The movie overall was a good watch because it was great to go down memory lane with all the amazing songs he's had in his discography. But it did kind of take on that type of landscape. My modern day artists, just because I know they're absolute rock stars and there's a huge backstory behind the scenes that I would like to see are A, Justin Timberlake. I want the full story from the Britney Spears days through NSYNC to the solo days to his married life now. And then the other one, the rock star of rock stars, John Mayer. That guy's got some stories from backstage and behind the scenes, I'm sure. So those are a couple that I'd like to look for in the future for biopic movies.
That's interesting. Let's touch real quick, too, on what we did in our personal golf rounds past week, because we both played again right around the same time, same day.
It was.
I think we were both out there pretty much.
So I'll let you go first. How'd you do out there?
My putting was the worst it's been in a really long time, to the point where I stopped keeping score on the back nine because I just couldn't handle it.
Never good.
That said, couple different stories from the round. First of all, it had rained the night before. It was walking only, back nine only.
Damn.
So we walked the back. Wow. Yeah, we had to walk the back nine
quite
twice.
Quite restrictive. Jeez.
Yeah, it was really, we were like the only people on the course. It rained on us twice. We were out there. I shared this on my Instagram and I want to get your take on this. I don't know if you saw what I talked about. I had a shot where I had to hit a low punch, only like 50 yards to get to the green. Mm. And I took up my, hit the shot. It hit the cart path and bounced backwards past me into a ravine next to the road. I then switched over to the pitching wedge because now I didn't have to hit a punch, walked up to it, hit it again. I again hit the cart path and again it hit backwards over the road to the other side of the road. I have never had that happen before.
That is probably the worst streak of luck in two consecutive swings I've heard of in a long time. I mean, yeah. It also takes a finite amount of skill for you to hit such an amazingly random shot twice in a row, too.
Twice.
So pat
twice.
Yourself on That's the back for that.
I am that skilled. I will say I made up for all of my horribleness on the when we played the 18th for the second time.
Yes, I tell you, I did hear about this. Nice finish.
Hit a weak drive. It was an okay drive, but it kind of trickled off to the right. But then stuffed a hybrid within a foot of the pin to tap in for birdie.
Oh, that's the absolute best. Good finish. Just a tap in on 18, yeah. Just a stress free finish. Nothing Good better finish. To walk off the course. Indeed, I grinded out with a par on the last. I think, yeah, I was dropping putts left and right though. That's the important thing is when you're making putts, especially the ones you get for birdie, because they're few and far between for players like us. And you take advantage mm-hmm. of that, it allows you to go low. So I'm staying in the 70s. Played well again with another round of the 70s. I'm trying to keep that streak alive. I'm playing Thursday, so we'll see how it goes, and I'll report back and see if I can stay below 80. This is a streak I'd love to keep alive, but. Mike, it starts with the driver and ends with the putter. So
yep.
Get those done, you're on your way.
That's a very obvious statement, but we'll let you get away with it. Let's move over to our book report on The Big Miss by Hank Haney, yes. His time coaching Tiger Woods. We just did chapter 7, Quitting, second to last chapter. Once again, not a lot about Tiger's time with women.
Is it mean that I just women? Wanted just the smut and the gossip just for one chapter? I didn't think that was too much to ask for.
You know, I really wonder how much Haney really knew or not. He keeps saying he didn't know. Mm. It wasn't something he was aware of and all this stuff. And, you know, it sounds like Tiger played everything really close to the chest. So I'm not that surprised by it. But I feel like my takeaway through this chapter really was that Hank Haney finally grew a pair and did what was best for him emotionally and personally.
Yeah, it did. It took a while for him. The relationship is just so tenuous. These 6 years as they've diatribed it in the book, it's just they've never been on solid ground, even through winning tournaments and majors and whatnot. It just Hank never really felt on solid ground, and it was very interesting for Hank to kind of take a seat back as he watched Tiger's life like go into shambles and ruin himself, and the sad apology in front of the blue curtain, and the Tiger blaming this on his parents, and Hank and just all he can do is just kind of sit back and watch, because as his swing coach, he doesn't want to get involved in everything that was involved with that. He tried to be a friend via text message, but there's only so much you can say to a man who had been as broken as Tiger was in 2009.
Yeah, I mean, he seemed to it was obvious to me that Hank had to be more than just a swing coach. He had to be a psychiatrist at the same time to figure out how to get the swing thoughts into Tiger.
Yes.
And that's just it really was. I feel like maybe the word toxic is appropriate. This was a toxic working environment. For Hank, not for Tiger, because Tiger was the one who made it that way.
It is, yeah. And you just kind of think about the way even Steve Williams' caddy acts around him throughout this book, and just how his agents are always kind of at an arm's length. And Tiger turned into a big time kind of stone face after this whole scandal and whatnot. It was just very rigid and protective of everything he said and did in the public eye. The thing that really, really took me by surprise, I knew that he was a private guy. His yacht is literally called Privacy. But after the mm-hmm. scandal, for Tiger Woods to cover his glass windows in butcher paper so that paparazzi photographers could not snap photos from the water into his backyard and living room, that just showed you how just like out of control, paranoid, freaked out he was during this whole thing.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting because you kind of expected him to change more drastically maybe after his therapy and just everything that happened to him. And he seemed to change in terms of his golf game, where he reverted to amateurish behavior with his swing. But he didn't he kind of sank even more into himself, it seems, personally. And now we get the Tiger that I think we all wanted, where he seems really open on the course. He seems to be having a good time and enjoying it and recognizing that you need to enjoy what you're doing to do well. But he wasn't there at the end of this with Hank Haney.
Yeah, the excerpt that caught me off guard was the mopey Tiger prepping for the 2010 Masters, where you'll appreciate this. We all know what this is like as amateur golfers. Tiger Woods became so bothered by his driving on the front nine that I believe on the seventh or eighth hole of Augusta National, he just sat in the cart and just decided to take a few holes off. Think about that. Tiger Woods was practicing for the Masters, coming up on Amen Corner at Augusta National, and felt so crappy about the way he was driving the ball, he decided to just walk it and take a few holes off.
It's that coupled with how he played Thursday, Friday of the Masters, having such gone through what he went through and still being like, my game sucks. Why am I not playing better? And really putting it all on Hank Haney. When any of us, you know, all of us, when we're out that first time out after not having played for a while, we don't have the expectations because we recognize we're not going to play.
Yeah, especially everything that was looming with him. We know what was going on there. That was not like a, you're trying to find your swing. It's like, you're trying to find your life right now, Tiger, at this moment.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting crossroads, that 2010 Masters. That kind of was the beginning of the end of that whole relationship between Tiger and Haney. And it's interesting, right to the very end, literally the phone call where Hank Haney said, hey, Tiger, this is just not going to work anymore. I've appreciated the time to work with you. It's been great being your instructor. I'm no longer going to be your coach. Tiger just refused to accept the breakup on the phone. He's just like, no, we're still working together.
Well, I think it was horrible that Hank unfortunately did things in such a way that made him have to then take it via text because Tiger wasn't available to talk over the phone. Yeah. That was... I understand he was doing it to kind of put himself so it was like, it's done. By the time I call him, it's like, it's done. I already sent the statement to the Golf Channel and we're, you know, this is happening, so that he didn't have the opportunity to get back, you know, pushed back on. But I think it's unprofessional and disrespectful to give it to Tiger in a text.
He wouldn't allow the breakup, Mike. It was like that Seinfeld episode with Jerry's girlfriend who wouldn't allow Jerry to break up. He just wouldn't do it. Yep. Just you don't have
We're not broken up.
Yeah, there's not enough reasons. I'm sorry. Yeah.
See you tomorrow. Yeah.
That was chapter 7. Big Miss. Great book.
We'll be wrapping it up. I think we are in the last chapter. Yes. So we'll have the end of it next week. We'll have to think about what we're going to do next.
Any suggestions? Let us know. Golf books out there. Yeah, golf book that's a good read. Hit us up at MWRINC, at Course of Life 1 on Twitter. Let us know.
Yeah, for sure. Let's move over to this week's guest. Alex, you got to talk to another Alex.
Finally. I think this is the first. We had an guest. I don't think we have.
I think so. Yeah. But what's different here is that she can probably outdrive you twice. If you got to hit your tee shot twice, I think she still would outdrive you.
She might, especially if I hit one of those heel jobs that goes 162 yards in the right rough, which I'm known to do every once in a while. Definitely could outdrive me any day of the week. And we even get into her hitting a driver on her knees. You won't believe how far she can hit. She gets into that too.
All that. It's going to be Alex Phillips coming up, Symetra Tour Pro and long top 10 in the world in long driving. Alex Phillips. But first, we want to let you know that this conversation is brought to you by our partners at Groove It Golf, creators of the sold out
Groove It
Golf Brush. Completely sold out. You can't get it anymore. We're going to talk about it anyway because it's going to be coming back. They're making some tweaks to it. I don't know what they're going to improve because it's already fantastic.
It's going to be great. This is going to be like the pre-order for like a Justin Bieber album. We're going to get the countdown going for hours, minutes, days until you can order your Groove It Brush. You know, we'll have a release party and everything. It'll be a whole thing.
Let's talk about what we love about it and what we know they won't be changing. It's got a patented pump inside that you can put water or cleaning solution in. So that goes on a club before you scrub. It's super easy to refill on the go around the course as well. It's got magnets so you can pop it off your bag and take it with you over to where you're hitting so that you can clean it after those chunky practice swings, which I know I do all the
time. Never.
And then, of course, those bristles on that brush have a 3-year guarantee. So if you wear it out, send it back, they'll give you a brand new one for free. It's just fantastic. You can get maximum backspin, distance, and accuracy with each shot. So prepare to be amazed what clean grooves will give you. Head on over to grooveitbrush.com, check it out, and get ready for them to restock. Again, that's grooveitbrush.com.
No. Next up on the tee from just outside of Las Vegas, Nevada, we have a tour pro with Symetra Tour status, and she's also a top 10 ranked world long driver that could probably outdrive me by miles and definitely out bench press me too. It's Alex Phillips joining the Course of Life. Alex, how's it going today?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing good. Thank you. So I wanted to just first say great to have another Alex on the show. I think it's been about a year and a half on the podcast. I don't know if we've had anyone else with my name on here, but I just,
it's a good name.
It is. I enjoy having it as well. So let's start early with you though. You know, in your bio and your website and your blog, swinglikeagirlgolf.com, it talks about how you grew up playing the game from a young age, but what were your like very first memories of golfing as a kid growing up?
I have two very vivid memories playing golf growing up. One of them, I had this basketball painted golf ball. That was my favorite golf ball, nice. Which I don't know why, because I hate basketball, but I loved it. And my dad, when he taught me how to play golf, he really just taught me to swing as hard as I can. He figured he could teach me to putt later on. And we're on the hole. We're on the 11th hole at Hidden Valley Country Club in Reno, Nevada. Vividly remember this. And there's a pile of dirt. They were doing construction on the right hand side. And I'm like, Dad, where do I go? Because I'd only ever play the front nine. And he goes, hit it at that. I'm like, Dad, I'm going to reach it and lose my favorite golf ball. He goes, no, you're not. Just aim it at that. And I was like, Dad, I'm going to lose my golf ball. He goes, no, you're not. And I go, yes, I am. And I freaking hit it, landed it right in the middle of the dirt. Golf ball gone forever.
Oh, gosh. I know. never to see it again, too.
Never again. So he had to buy me a new basketball golf ball. But that, you know, that was when we were first learning, kind of realized that I did have that strength and kind of, you know, he groomed me for that. And then my other super vivid memory as a kid, when I'm super young, my first par ever, same golf course, Hidden Valley, I was on the third hole, par three. I had that tailor-made bubble shaft. You know, I had a 9 pitching wedge combined club and I hit it right into the bunker, greenside bunker, hit my 9 iron out and made the putt for par. And I still have the golf ball for my first par ever.
Love that. Right up on the trophy case too. I appreciate that too. The vivid memories are the best ones, especially from our youngest days. Cause that's what got us all going and definitely got you to where you are today. So I guess the distance was a thing the whole way along. Huh? We never doubted that you had the distance to compete on the long drive circuit, I guess. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up as a gymnast, so I've always been super strong. And that's how my dad taught me to play golf. That's kind of how I got my coach to notice me when I was in high school, my college coach. I was playing in a tournament and I was out driving all the girls and he actually walked into the fairway to laser one of my drives. Cause he's like, there's no way she hit it that far. Which is the first time that Coach Cartwright ever saw me play golf and kind of that's how I got my scholarship to play Division I in college.
Very cool. And you played in California, Cal Poly, St. Louis Obispo, correct?
San Luis Obispo. Yeah. It's a beautiful area if you've never been.
Nice. Yeah. So tell everyone about kind of what your career in college was like. I have to imagine you have some pretty good memories of playing college golf out in California and you played some great courses along the way, but just talk about kind of what that college career was like and maybe the best part of your career when you were playing in college specifically.
You know, I was really spoiled in college. We had 7 girls come in my freshman year. So we had 7 freshmen. I think one sophomore, one junior, we were a really young team. So, you know, there was a lot of camaraderie there. It was awesome. And then I met my best friend, my sophomore year, who ended up, her family has property. So I moved out with her, my second year and I lived on 50 acres, a quarter mile from the water. So my college career was amazing.
Sounds like a fake, that sounds like an episode of Entourage, basically.
I know, right? I really need my own reality show. But that was my off-course life. And at the time, Cal Poly didn't have a great on-campus practice facility or anything. They've gotten a lot better since. Not to age myself or anything, but they my practice during that, when I was in school, was about 20 minutes south of campus. And so the property that I lived on was halfway. So it made my travel much easier. So I got to practice a lot more and obviously go to the beach more. But you know, it was great. I tied for first in a tournament my freshman year, the Lampkin Invitational, which really thought I was going to have a great college career. I ended up having knee surgery about halfway through and it took me a little longer to recover than I was expecting.
What injury was it specifically to your knee?
I actually had my plica removed and then I tore up some cartilage. So it really wasn't that big of a deal. It was pretty minor surgery comparatively. My sister tore both her ACLs. So oh, wow. She was volleyball, a little harder sport. But I just mentally wasn't trusting my knee as much as I should have. And so, there was some time in my college career that I wasn't scoring like I wanted to. And that's kind of why I got out of golf after school. I coached, I got back into coaching kids again. I've been coaching with the first tee on and off for about 15 years.
That's awesome.
I love it. I love the kids. I love the life skills the first tee teaches.
Yeah, I have a background teaching kids to the really simplest parts of the game of golf. And it really is very rewarding as well to see them have that moment when they, you know, their first, you know, clean contact and, you know,
right, their first time they hit the ball in the air.
Their first stripe driver that goes 62 yards, but it's like the greatest feeling to them, you know?
It only
gets better from there. That's very cool. So you have that kind of background and you kind of took that step away. So I guess I'm curious kind of what drew you back. Was the idea of drawing you back more into the game? Was it that you wanted to play competitively in terms of tournament golf, or were you drawn back because of the world long drive angle?
So actually what happened was I was coaching a college team, and because of that, I went down to the PGA Show down in Florida. Mm. And I went to the demo day for my first time, which you've never been. Is awesome.
It's like the most gigantic driving range you can imagine. That's what I've seen.
360 degree driving range with like a 500 yard diameter. So you can't reach the other side unless you're Paul Howell, obviously, because he did it. I tried. but yeah, it was my first time ever there. And there's just, I mean, every golf nerd, anyone related to golf, anything golf-ish is at the PGA Show. And so I'm sitting there, and I was always long in college, in high school, even. I was a long hitter. And there was this girl next to me at the Callaway booth, like keeping up with me. And I'm like, damn, who's this girl? Right. And she's kind of giving me the look like, who's this girl? And I realized her staff bag is there. It was the 2013 world champion, Heather Lemaster.
Wow.
Okay. And now Heather Manfredda. And she kind of looked at me and I kind of looked at her and she's like, you ever think about long drive? And I'm like, no. She goes, you should. And I go, okay. And that's how I got into long drive.
Interesting. So basically you kind of like ran into like the Tiger Woods of female long drive, like
basically.
And she turned and told you, you should start doing this. So you took her advice quickly.
Yeah. And I was very lucky. Ended up, she lived in Sacramento. I lived in Reno at the time. And so I would drive over there, kind of get some practice in with her, got used to hitting the longer clubs. I mean, there's still USGA regulation, but a 48 inch shaft on a 5'5" little girl is really long. And so it took me a little time to get used to it, but Heather was huge in getting me into the sport. That was kind of how I got back into it. And, you know, I'm an athlete at heart. I needed something to compete in. I was working like a real job, which was terrible. And I needed some reason to be going to the gym and some reason to be practicing, you know, and long drive kind of gave me that reason. And then once I got back on the grid, I realized how much I missed the sport and how much I wanted to get back into playing again. So yeah, long drive lit the fire again, but my love's always been for golf.
Very cool. So I guess I'm curious what the mix is for you right now as we sit in 2020. You had some fantastic success in 2016 on the log drive circuit. I know you've got more status now in terms of the Symetra Tour, whenever that gets going again officially.
Yeah.
But I guess what's kind of your mix right now in your head as you're looking at this point in your golf career, between how much time are you spending focusing on the tournament golf aspect of your career versus the long drive circuit?
I was planning on focusing a little more time on long drive this year. Unfortunately, the tour has been completely canceled for 2020.
Yeah.
As of a couple of weeks ago, they were trying to still have the world championships. But as of right now, that's been postponed as well. So, that's not really high on the priority list at the moment. the other problem is now that tournaments are starting with the Symetra Tour, with the mini tours, even with the LPGA Tour, is not doing Monday qualifiers this year, which is kind of my only way to get into big tournaments, and I don't have that option. And now the Symetra Tour and the mini tours are starting to double and overlap. Last week they hosted two of my favorite events, the Colorado State Open and the Texas State Open, were on the same day. So you had to choose one or the other, which stinks because they're both great events and everyone wants to play in both of them. So, you know, I'm really working on my schedule right now to figure out where I'm going to be going next. I'm still doing a lot of charity and corporate events on the long drive side. I do have that top 10 ranking on the WLDA still. And so with that, I do a lot of charity and corporate events, which I love to do, love to travel for that, help the charities. entertainment.
Yeah, let's talk a little about this, that specifically. I was curious to ask, and you segued into it perfectly, because again, it's swinglikeagirlgolf.com, and you talk a little bit about the things that you can do. You actually like go to lots of different like corporate outings and tournaments, and will have like a long drive competition against the competitors there. You call it the Swing Like a Girl Challenge, which I'm sure a lot of the competitors love. To talk to everyone about like what that dynamic is like, because I know that you're probably a little unassuming to some people. And they're like, oh, okay, I can outdrive her, surely. And then obviously they get up and see you rip one and things change, right?
Exactly. And we're the ones that have shown up and people are like, who are you? And I'm like, on the long drive. They're like, no, you're not. Yeah, I promise. I'm the smallest competitor in the top 10 on the long drive tour. So I really don't look like I should hit it like I do. You know, the other competitors are bigger than me. I'm not saying big people are going to hit it far, but I mean, just looking at them, if we put the same golf swing on the ball, like, physics kind of help being bigger in that sport. So yeah, the charity events are a lot of fun. So what we usually do is I stay on a tee and people pay to try it out, drive me. If they do, they win a prize. If they don't, they get to use my shot. So it's kind of a win-win. It's all the money goes back to the charity. You know, I don't like taking a cut of what people are thinking or going to the charity. So I try and get sponsored by another company I've worked with. You know, Tito's, Monster, a lot of those big companies to sponsor me to be there so that we can help the charities. Nice. And then same thing goes with the corporate events. You know, I'm just there more for the entertainment factor. A lot of times I like to bring one of the boys with me because it's fun to watch the guys hit in real life. But a lot of people just like watching the girls because, you know, like we're not that big. So guys are like, if she can do it, I can do it. Good luck.
Yeah, no, it's very impressive to watch you swing. And there's tons of videos on YouTube of the competitions that you've been in as well. And I love the idea behind your branding too. Let's just talk about that terminology of swing like a girl, because it's interesting. It's one of those terms that maybe used to have like a negative connotation, but now it kind of represents a lot more when you see someone like you swing like a girl. That's completely the opposite of what the phrase was originally intended. Just talk about that kind of naming and what that term means to you.
You know, and that's exactly why I did it, because, you know, people don't really expect it. You know, I'm swinging like a girl. They're like, oh, they don't hit it that far. I'm like, okay, we'll try and keep up. Yeah. You know, it's that was a big part of why I did that, you know, and especially when I get the boys to the charity events, they're awesome. But, you know, at that point, you're just paying to have them hit the golf ball for you, because if you can compete with a long driver, you should be competing in long drive.
Right, yes.
So, whereas when I'm there, you know, they get the chance to have that long drive experience, but they actually have a chance against me sometimes, sort of a little bit. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, swing like a girl, but I love it. And I love kind of having that unassuming physical aspect when I show up. You know, I play the part a little bit. I wear the short skirt, I wear the makeup, and then, you know, I beat everyone.
It's a fun day for everyone. Yeah. Very cool. And I'm curious in regards to your length off the tee, you know, when you play in tournaments, you know, turning a Symetra event or a Monday qualifier for an LPGA event, my question is kind of how hard are you going at your driver? Are you going at it at 100% capability of what you do in a long drive circuit event, or is it toned back to maybe more like 70 or 80%?
It depends on the hole. What I like is that I'm a good enough player that I kind of have that option to have a little bit more left in the tank. So on a reachable par five, I can pull the long drive swing out. You know, I can hit it 320 and then have an iron in my hand into a par five. But normally no, the biggest difference, to put it into easy to relatable terms, on the grid, I'm swinging at about 116 to 117 miles an hour. On the golf course, I'm usually about 105, 106.
Okay. All right, cool.
That's kind of a big difference there. I mean, I can step it up, but I tend not to. I tend to try and hit more fairways.
Yeah, you thought about it in a much more evolved way than me being a 10 handicap, though. I don't even have those options. It's either just go 100% or don't go at all. So I appreciate that you got the versatility in your game. Hopefully it pays off for you once you get back to
tournament. It's kind of like having a 15th club for me. My my normal driver is like a 3-wood off the tee, and then I can step on it and have that extra shot. So, you know, it's that versatility that
reminds you of Phil Mickelson saying how he's got the, 295 yard cut and the 310 yard draw in his bag with the same club.
Exactly.
He's versatile. Yeah. it's A Phil on Instagram. You're a great follow as well. In addition to swinglikeagirlgolf.com, a few more questions I want to get to regarding, following you on social media. I have to ask about your dog, who you take on all sorts of walks and runs through nature, the mountains, the desert. I'm curious, how do you do it, and how do you keep your dog so composed? Because I for sure couldn't do all that exercise with my dog.
Oh my God. She's a puppy. She's 9 months old.
Wow,
so she has all the energy in the world. But she is amazing. I just got her about 6 months ago, and she, we're working on the training a little bit. She tends to listen when she wants to. But she's an absolute cutie pie, and she's the one that actually got me into it. She loves going for hikes and stuff. I'd never been on a hike in Vegas in 5 years of living here. I have hiked every freaking trail in Vegas since I got her.
Nice. Yeah, that's very cool. I've seen a lot from, what's that called? The Red Rock Mountain Preserve?
Yeah, Red Rock Canyon National Park.
Okay. Very neat area. Yeah. And one other thing I wanted to comment to from your life at home, since a lot of people are spending more time at home now, is I've seen you hitting into a net, which I've been doing a lot more of in my backyard. I'm curious, kind of like, what's like, obviously, hitting into a net, just the act of itself, there's not a whole lot going in there. I'm curious what your practice sessions are like into a net. Like, how do you make it fun? And what's like practice kind of changed? How has it changed for you in the last few months?
You know, the biggest thing I do when I'm hitting in a net and stuff is video work. Especially when I'm working with my coach, if we're tweaking anything, the result of the ball doesn't really matter that much. I like to still hit it, to still have that feeling. But when I'm working in the backyard, it's a lot of video. I know a lot of what I'm looking for in my swing, but my coach is a great Brian Pate. He's out of Phoenix in the winters and out of Truckee, California in the summers. And because of that, we've gotten really good at video work, but he works with most of his students, and with me, he's great. I send him something and he'll get right back to me with what to do. We set up FaceTime, and so he can actually be there with me and give me live feedback and everything. So that's a big part of what I do with my practice. But the biggest thing, is the putting. You can still practice inside of 8 feet anywhere. And that's what's going to translate to the golf course really importantly.
Definitely. I like that tip as well. And video is nice every once in a while, just to take a quick look at what your swing looks like. You think about it a lot, but you don't watch it a lot from the behind the line view. So that's a good tip for anyone who's just got a phone. You can set that up right behind you in the backyard and see.
Absolutely.
One other thing I saw on your Instagram is you hitting a driver from on your knees. I want you to embarrass all the amateurs out there and tell us, how far can you hit that driver when you're on your knees on the range?
That one actually hit the range cart 220 out.
Oh God, jeez. That's like a bomb 3-wood for me. That makes me feel.
And that was at sea level. So
nice. Love it. And then one other thing I just saw today, I hate to bring up something so unfortunate, but it looks like, according to your Instagram, you had a death regarding a plant in your household.
Oh my gosh. I'm the worst mom ever.
What went wrong there?
I forgot about it.
Yeah, it's tough. I have a plant that I've been talking about on the podcast the last few weeks, and I try and remind myself. It's gotten down to the fact where I have cell phone reminders for me to water my plant every day. Like that's how tough it's gotten, but I'm trying to get these blueberries to grow. Yeah.
I went to Texas for a week and forgot to have anyone watch over my plant.
Yeah. It is a tough scenario. Final question for you, which we have for all of our golfers here on the podcast, is the 19th hole question. When you're done with a round or a competition in the long drive circuit, what is your go-to meal and maybe drink that you like to have after you're done playing?
Are we at a bar or am I cooking?
Yeah, we're definitely going to the clubhouse, 19th hole, behind the 18th green there.
I'm definitely going for a vodka soda with an orange then.
Nice. That's a pretty healthy drink order. And then what would you get to eat?
A giant burger, avocado, barbecue sauce, everything.
Nice. Well, we just did a live burger demo a few weeks ago on our Instagram for the podcast as well. So be sure to check that out.
It was a
really neat grill. But Alex Phillips, thanks so much for joining. Again, we'll be following on the World Long Drive Circuit once that gets going, and all your tournament golf and content as well too. Again, it's A Phil on Instagram, and hit them straight. All right.
Thank you so much.
That interview with Alex Phillips is thanks to our friends at Desert Fox Golf. Alex, I got a question for you.
Fire.
Where are you putting your phone in the golf cart?
It's going on my phone caddy, obviously, because I'm smart sane, and I've got my ish together. Right. So, you know.
We are. We love this thing because instead of putting your phone, I don't know, in a cup holder, which is where you would put a cup, or down there with a towel where it's going to get scratched with extra balls and keys, you can spend 5 seconds and put it in the phone caddy that holds it onto that bar that sticks up. I don't know what that A pillar, I guess it is, on the front of the golf cart, and have it stick there pointed at you. And it sits in there perfectly. You can tap it when you get in the cart, check your DMs, check your music, put in your scores, check your GPS, all that fun stuff. It's super functional. It's the best way to keep your phone safe and ready on the course at all times. And you can save 20% off your purchase with the promo code COURSEOFLIFE. So you can get all these different colors and options and make it your own. Really awesome. Again, that's promo code COURSEOFLIFE to save 20% on your Desert Fox phone caddy at DesertFoxGolf.com. Again, that's DesertFoxGolf.com. Great chat there with Alex Phillips, 5'5", just an amazing power, unassuming, and she's getting paid to go hit it against the guys and hit it further.
That. What a gig that is, just going to the tournaments and being the unassuming like monster of the golf course. And you're just like, no big deal. Like this, this girl's the long driver. Yeah. Yep. She is. Don't worry. Just let her hit. It's all good. You'll see. And she just pounds out a 300-yard drive with ease.
Again, I think this speaks to how you don't need to be the biggest person on tour to be the longest person on tour.
Exactly.
You know, you need to be fit. You don't need to be big fit, but you need to be fit. But you don't need to be 6'2", 6'3", 6'4".
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. As long as you have good mechanics, you're going to hit the ball.
And she's an interesting case, Michael, because she was talking about how, you know, because she plays some Metro Tour events and then she also does the long drive circuit. So it's interesting how she's got like, she goes about like 85-90% at her driver when she's in tournament play compared to what she'd normally do on a long drive event. So it's interesting to kind of hear that dichotomy and what that dual life that she's leading right now. We'll have a live that'll be up on my IGTV as well. It's at Course of Life Alex at COL Podcast as well on Instagram if you want to check out more of the content with her. But she was a great guest and enjoyed having a fellow Alex on as well.
Let's talk real quick about our Patreon. Again, that's where you can support the podcast and what we do, starting at $2 a month. You get some exclusive blog content, cool stuff going up there. We got some of your memories from the Travelers Championships of past up there already. We'll have our exclusive interview that we put up there as well for July coming up. Of course, you got to pay a little more to get some of that exclusive interview content, but you know, you get to support us, show us you love what we do, and also you get to provide some feedback on what you want to see us do and maybe help steer the content that we put on the podcast.
Absolutely. So, and we'll check you out on future episodes as well. So check us out on Patreon when you get the chance.
Let's talk football because Tom Brady is in trouble.
Let's rag on Tom Brady again, our Tampa Bay segment.
You're not bitter.
Getting very popular on the podcast. I don't know what it is. It just keeps finding its way into the episode notes. This guy just keeps getting himself in trouble. But the latest from Tampa Bay and Brady's move to Tampa, Florida, of all places. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. God, totally not bitter. But now in trouble, Mike, for violating the NFL's request to not have any sort of group gatherings or workouts right now. He's going against NFL order and inviting up to a dozen of his teammates to join him. When does the madness stop? Are we going to lock this guy away? I think it might have to be hard time for a man who just keeps infringing upon the rules and regulations of society, right?
You know, that may not be a bad idea, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. You're going to hate me for taking this line.
Oh, yeah. Do it.
Okay. Tom Brady is known to be a very close confidant of one President Donald Trump. Right?
Oh.
We know they hang out all the time.
Oh, wow.
We know they're best buddies.
Is this a campaign message subtly?
So Tom Brady is the Donald Trump of football right now. He doesn't care what the science is. He doesn't care what's best for everybody. He only cares about himself. If he wants to go work out with a group, he's going to go work out with a group. Go ahead and tell him otherwise. He doesn't care because he is the president of football.
So he's the unofficial silent spokesman for opening back up America, basically. That's his
role. I don't think he's silent, but yes.
I love the angle. You're always thinking, the wheels are always churning. I just know that we gotta keep a watch on Tom and Tampa Bay. I did hear there were a couple COVID cases on the Bucs, so I'm hoping those names don't get released. Be a real shame if any one of those workouts was on the list. So
it probably is.
I'll be the watchdog for all of Tampa Bay's wrongdoings in the future, but just know I got my eye on it.
So much. Let's talk about baseball, because I'm following what's happening in baseball simply through the headlines of
the roller coaster.
The owners bring out a new plan to the players, and the players reject the plan, and the owners bring another plan, and the players reject the plan. And once again, the players rejected another plan. And now the league is saying they're just going to do what they agreed back in March, which I don't know what that is.
They're just going to force some sort of random just second tier season. And the players aren't going to like the structure of the agreement at all. They're not going to be happy to be there. This is just turning into more and more of a mess. It's almost to the point where I'm at the point now where I'm just saying to myself, I don't know if I even want to see a season on these terms now, because I know how everyone feels now. It really just bugs me. It's like, no, you guys aren't really playing like really, really because you really want to get back out there. You're just playing because you just finally came to an agreement to get back out there. It's frustrating.
But did they come to agreement? That's the thing. Did they come to an agreement, or is this like it's such a mess. And part, you know, I miss baseball. I miss seeing the updates and getting those live watching sometimes when you got a guy going for a no hitter or something, but
a little day baseball.
I miss it, but I don't miss it, because at the same time, it's like, whatever.
Yeah. Have you seen any of the KBO, the Korean baseball? No. It's funny. So poor Carl Ravitch. They stuck Carl Ravitch on calling the Korean baseball games.
He needs something to
which
do.
Air from about 3:30 to 6:30 a.m. You can just tell how tired he is calling that action. He just stopped calling the action by like the 6th or 7th inning. It's just resorted to just gossip about whether the MLB is actually going to play. But it's quite a funny sight to see. And it's just further sign that Carl Ravitch is amongst the media members that are desperate to get this game back at any cost. So, you know, hopefully that gets done, and I just see a little more smiley face from these players if they agree to a deal. Mm-hmm. Just to pretend like you're a little happier to get going again. You know?
Just hit a couple home runs, get a couple strikeouts.
Something. Give me something on my screen. No. Yeah.
You know, give the Yankees another trophy and we'll call it a season.
All right. It's hashtag always end with food, brought to you by our partners at Restelli's. Restelli's Meat, best assortment of responsibly sourced meats, individually packaged and shipped directly to you. You don't have to go to the grocery store. Just go to Restelli's.com, RASTELLIS. Promo code is GOLF10 for 10% off. GOLF10 for 10% off. Speaking of meat, I did another great Sunday steak. Fortunately, I made too much this past Sunday. Had the leftovers, turned them into steak tacos. It was a great two meal episode. I pat myself.
That just sounds like a great idea. First of all, I don't understand what you mean when you said you made too much steak.
Yeah. So what happened was,
I don't understand that statement.
So it's like I was hopping on the grill on Sunday, and I got like four little tri tips. It's like one of those deals where like one would not quite be enough. Two would be a little too much in terms of meat. And then the last second, I decided to throw some hot dogs on. So I was like, okay, I can save one for tomorrow and just do one right. I can preserve.
Yeah.
Okay. Ended up being a win, but shout out to Steak Tacos. I'm a big taco guy right now. It's big taco season for me. I've been eating a lot of them. It's also July 4th season coming up in just a week or two here. As fast
just
as that
a week
is.
And a half away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thoughts on July 4th? Cookout, American things. What are the traditional things that get you going on a red, white, and blue holiday?
I mean, burgers, hot dogs, ribs. Really, burgers and dogs to me are July 4th. That's probably what I'll do. Burgers and dogs.
The annoying one, which is just hard to eat and annoying on your teeth, is corn on the cob. I get in a lot of fights with people about this because it's one of those foods where I like it. I love it and I enjoy the taste of it, but it's very cumbersome to eat. It's an annoyance on your teeth. So a lot of people are anti-corn on the cob, Mike. I know you love it, but there's just a lot of people who are just super against it.
Are you anti-corn on the cob?
No, I'm in.
Is that what you're trying to say? Are you backdoor anti-corn on the cob?
No,
are you like,
I'm in. I'm like, on a 1 to 10, I'm like 6.5 out of 10 on corn on the cob. So,
I mean,
corn on the cob, not more.
I mean, that's what floss is for. Floss is for after you eat corn on the cob.
Shout out to the water pick as well, too. I got one of those and it changed my life. If you haven't had one of those, you know what I'm talking about. But that's a wrap on this week's Course of Life. Hopefully, you got a good plethora of information from everything in the world going on right there. Golf, sports, pop culture, and everything going on in our lives. For Michael, I'm Alex. Everybody have a good week.